You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, a new documentary delves into the lives of the employees at the largest producer of American flags in the country, Eder Flag, in Oak Creek, Wisconsin. Now, if you're homeless or housing insecure, finding shelter is critical, especially with Wisconsin winter temperatures dipping down below freezing. If you're a minor, you may not have a lot of options. House of Hope in Green Bay is just one of two places in Wisconsin that's licensed to house youth aged 17 and under. And they recently updated their facilities based on an idea from a young person staying at the shelter. Carrie Wilson is Director of Programming for House of Hope Green Bay. Carrie, welcome to Central Time.
Hi.
And Shannon Wienert is Executive Director of House of Hope. Shannon, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having us.
Shannon, let's start with you. What is the main mission there at House of Hope?
Well, House of Hope's mission is to provide a safe and supportive place where young parents and children experiencing homelessness will become confident, independent, and successful members of our community. And we have a vision that every youth knows what it feels like to have a home.
And Carrie, can you tell us about the number of at-risk and or homeless youth in the Green Bay area?
So youth homelessness looks different because it's more covert. A lot of couch hopping and staying with friends. So it's hard to quantify an exact number because a lot of it's hidden and a lot of the youth in the area are unaware of resources. So that's really what we want with our drop-in center, is to get this information out there so that youth in our area can have help navigating the resources. Currently, 1 in 5 youth experiencing homelessness are also experiencing human trafficking. 1 in 6 youth experiencing homelessness are physically assaulted.
And Shannon, before we talk more about the drop-in center, can you talk about the sort of services and outreach that youth in the Green Bay area can get with House of Hope?
Absolutely. So we provide a number of different resources. The drop-in itself is a comfortable space for youth where they can receive programming aimed at their development. There's meeting for space for youth to meet with other service providers. They can do their laundry while they're there, take a shower. They have access to storage and basic needs like eating, napping, accessing health care, mental health care, and receiving referral services to other services in the community that they may need that House of Hope does not provide. And while they're here, they'll have access to things like broadband internet, computers, electronics, video games, things to make them feel like a normal teenager. And we designed the drop-in center based on, a youth's advice, one of the youth that we were serving. And so she and a group of other young people really helped us design the space and told us what we needed to help them feel like a regular teenager in our space.
And Carrie, as Shannon mentioned, the drop-in center idea came from somebody who'd used the other services there. How important is it for you, being a program provider there, to talk to the kids themselves, the teens themselves, about what they need, what they're missing in their lives?
So at House of Hope, we really focus on being person-centered and providing trauma-informed care. And what that means is that everything we do at House of Hope is through the feedback of our clients that we're serving. So if a program isn't working, or in this case, if we're developing something, we want the voices of the people we're serving to be at the forefront of our programming so that it reflects their needs and not our interpretation of it.
Shannon, how much community awareness is there of homelessness, especially youth homelessness in the Green Bay area? I know when I talk to people who work with homeless people in other communities, sometimes there's a thought in communities that this is a big city problem. This is a Milwaukee or maybe Madison problem. Is there awareness in the Green Bay community?
I think there is a level of awareness in the Green Bay community, especially with people who, are in the schools. I know the teachers are well aware that there are issues. People that are working in youth programming, like, after school programs. But if people aren't connected to those programs or don't work in that field, they may not be aware of it. Like Carrie said, youth homelessness is such a hidden issue because they're couch hopping, they're moving from place to place, and they're staying wherever they can when they can find a place to stay. Youth, especially teens, are not usually comfortable asking for help, and it can be an embarrassing experience for them. So we don't always see it, and the community at large probably doesn't understand how big of an issue it is.
And Carrie, the drop-in center, big news for you there. Now, I know, I believe it just opened last week. What is the, how's it going so far?
It's going wonderful. We've had a couple people come in and stop in and receive services. It's really a point for navigation for our youth. So they're coming in, and like Shannon had shared, they can access food, showers, laundry. And we have case management on staff that are specialized in providing youth services. We also partner with Raise a Foundation and Home Base so that our youth have choice of provider. It's not just us saying you have one or done. They have the ability to make those decisions for themselves, and we really want to empower them in doing that.
And Shannon, if somebody's listening thinking, hey, we don't have, you know, youth-specific services for kids who are at risk of homelessness in our community, we don't have a drop-in center like that, what would you say to them if they want to get the ball rolling to create something like that?
Well, House of Hope Green Bay would be a good place to reach out to. You can call us or email us, and we would be more than happy to share all the information that we have and, you know, meet with them to help them develop something like this in their community. Our goal really is to share resources and help, you know, lift up other organizations doing wonderful things with youth so that the people that we're serving are able to access what they need.
Carrie and Shannon, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
Carrie Wilson is Director of Programming for House of Hope Green Bay. Shannon Wienant is Executive Director there at House of Hope. We talked to them today about providing shelter and resources for at-risk and homeless youth in the Green Bay area, including that new drop-in center just opened last week. Right now, it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a story about a holiday display in northeastern Wisconsin.
There's a teenager in Oshkosh who's had a lifelong love of Christmas lights. Brody Enley has taken that passion to new heights with a choreographed light display that's raised thousands of dollars for charity. WPR's Joe Schultz has more on how Enley uses his hobby to support the community.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way.
Thousands of Christmas lights flicker on an Oshkosh home, lining the roof and the windows, hanging from arches over the driveway, and draped over bushes. There are even several light-up Christmas trees in the yard. The lights change to the tune of classic holiday songs.
I put this show together with just a little help from my family and friends. This year, I added RGB pixel lights to some of the outline of my house, and to start the season, I have programmed 4 new songs for a total of 10 songs that will play for your entertainment throughout the year.
That's Brody Enley in a message that plays during his annual holiday light show. The 13-year-old has used the show to raise money for local charities over the last 4 years. Enley has decorated the exterior of his parents' house since he was 7, but has been drawn to electronics for as long as he can remember.
Ever since I was very young, I mean 4 or 5, I've always been interested in electricity.
When he was 9, Enley created his first synchronized show.
It was really just me plugging lights into, I had a speaker box that would turn on and off some outlets on it and then play music aloud. But the year after that, there was a lot more involvement.
That's when Enley upgraded his show, going from 6 outlets to turn lights on and off to 16. He also began using the show to support local charities.
I really decided to do it for charity because I thought, if I'm already putting up this light display, why not help the community as well?
Since 2019, he's raised over $8,000, collected almost 500 books, and over 1,000 pounds of food. This year, all monetary donations will be doubled through a matching gift.
It's pretty crazy to me. I mean, I never could have even imagined being able to help out so many people.
Instead of a speaker outside, Enley now uses a radio transmitter with a small broadcast radius, and programming that station's playlist is his first step each year. Then, he sequences the lights on the computer to ensure they line up with the music.
I have a group that is all of the RGB lights on my house, all the color-changing lights, which I can put a fire effect on or layer them on top of each other to create more complicated effects.
and then do that all to the music.
Enley says he's put in about 300 hours of work into this year's show. He even used a 3D printer to create clips that mount lights to the roof of his house. Enley says there are a couple reasons the hard work pays off. Those tuning into his personal radio station while they drive by the lights can hear why.
First, Christmas lights make me smile, and I hope my lights will make you smile too. Second, it gives me a chance to use my passion and abilities to do good in my community.
And his parents, Bronson and Cindy Enley, couldn't be more proud.
We've gotten a lot of great support from people who come and see the show and from a few corporate sponsors, but it all adds together to really help out, and I couldn't be prouder.
It's great to see his passion really give back to the community and help people respond so generously.
But with so much technical talent already, what are Enley's dreams for the future?
I have a lot of different career paths that I am interested in. The biggest ones being a computer scientist or being a software engineer.
Until then, Enley hopes to continue supporting the community with his holiday light display.
WPR's Joe Schultz brought us that story on Brody Enley of Oshkosh. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Want to make sure you catch every single Wisconsin Life story? Subscribe to our podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. I'm Maureen McCollum.
Coming up, we talked to a co-director of a documentary about Eder Flag, a company in Oak Creek, Wisconsin, that's the largest producer of American flags in the country, and learn about the people who work there. That's coming up next here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. The biggest manufacturer of American flags in the country is located here in Wisconsin, Eder Flag in Oak Creek. A new documentary from National Geographic delves into the lives of the people who work there, many of whom are immigrants and refugees. Here's one of the company's managers talking about the employees there.
We have employees from all over the world.
A lot of my employees been through a lot. Maida lost everything in Puerto Rico in hurricane. Yvonne fled her country pregnant and then spent years in refugee camps in Tanzania. Milenko came from Bosnia. He was prisoner of war there. Then we have Ali, who fled Iraq with young family.
Cynthia Wade is an Academy Award-winning documentary filmmaker. Her latest film is the National Geographic documentary, The Flag Makers. Cynthia's co-director. It debuts today on Disney Plus, and today it advanced to the shortlist for the Academy Awards for Short Documentary. Cynthia, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Before we get into the documentary, congratulations on the news. Exciting to be in that shortlist for the Oscars.
It's super exciting. There are 15 films in this category, the short documentary category, and we're one of the 15, and it's really a thrilling day. It's also been released on Disney Plus today, so It's been a big day for the film.
But definitely. Now, Eder Flag, a big name in the American flag-making business, but not necessarily a household name for everyone. What led you there to make a documentary about the business, but mainly about the people who work there?
It really came from a discussion that I had with my co-director, Sharon Leese. We are filmmakers, independent filmmakers, and we often make our own films, but sometimes we band together and decide to make a film together. And so 3 years ago, we were having a conversation about our increasing discomfort of how we both felt that the American flag had been co-opted by a very narrow, specific political group. And I was just feeling like this is my country. I love the flag. I always loved the 4th of July. Why do I feel like somehow it only represents a very certain narrow political set of beliefs? And why do I feel that way? So it came from that curiosity. Ultimately, we found Eder Flag. And then when we realized it was primarily staffed by immigrants and refugees from around the world, we thought, well, that would make a really interesting film to kind of explore that. And we got access. The Flag Factory gave us access.
And we got a taste of kind of the diversity of the staff there, from Radica, the sewing manager, originally from Serbia. Tell us a little more about the variety of people you met at Eder Flag.
Yeah, I mean, Eder Flag is extraordinary. There are nearly 200 employees, and they come literally from all around the globe. There are more than a dozen languages that are spoken at Eder Flag, and it really is an example of the best of our country, the best of our democracy. Even if the flag makers themselves can't, they don't speak the same language, they find a commonality and they find a way to work together. Even just seeing them in the lunchroom where they're unfolding these amazing home cooked lunches, where you see Moroccan stew and you see things from Bosnia and Serbia and Croatia and, you know, Puerto Rico, et cetera, et cetera. It's really remarkable to see. And so we just thought this would be such a good visual representation of what the best of our country can be, all in the walls of this flag factory.
And I got to say, Cynthia, if this had been a sitcom or a TV drama, and there'd been this cast of characters with such diverse backgrounds and unique and compelling stories, I wouldn't have bought it. I wouldn't have thought it was really plausible. But this is real. This is what you actually saw there.
Yeah. And what's really exciting about it is that the documentary has been optioned to be developed, to be the genesis of a Broadway musical.
Wow.
Which can take years. That might take 10 years or more. But in the vein of Come From Away on Broadway, a producer approached me and said, I think this could actually make a really spectacular musical. And I hadn't thought of it because I'm a documentary filmmaker. But then I thought, oh, you are right. So it's possible that this will live on in another form, in the theatrical musical form.
Now, the workers here are making flags and flagpoles, and it came through in this half-hour documentary, different attitudes, different thoughts about what the flag meant to the people who work there. Can you give us some of the different perspectives that you saw?
Yes. The film is opens with Radica, our sewing manager, who fled. She fled Bosnia in the 90s. Her home was bombed. Her country was on the verge of war. And she fled to the United States with her husband and small child. And over the past nearly 30 years, built this really beautiful life for herself. Nice house in the suburbs, big flagpole in front. And she says, America gave me a lot. And I feel like I gave America my best. And so the film starts reflecting on various flag makers' experience of America and of the flag from the perspective of refugees and immigrants. But it also profiles Midwestern born and bred flag makers like Sugar Ray, who is the production manager, who is a Black man in Milwaukee, who is in charge of getting all of the flags out, packaged, all the flagpoles out, and yet has very conflicted feelings about the flag because there's so much inequality still in this country. And what we wanted to do is not make a simplistic story. We really wanted to be able to sit with each flag maker's story and sort of be steeped in their eyes, their feelings about this country and about the flag, and build a much more sort of nuanced view of all of the many feelings around the flag.
And one thing very striking, I wanted to ask you kind of what it was like behind the scenes. Your cameras are there as some of the staff are watching the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol, where flags and flagpoles are being waved, in some cases used as weapons. How was the staff who may have made those flags and flagpoles? Yeah. What were they saying to you at that time?
Yeah, I mean, you know, in the beginning when we started this film, to me, it was like an emotional feeling. Like, why does it feel like the flag sometimes being sort of put out there, it's like either you're with us or against us, you should always stand, like these very sort of monolithic, very strong, either you're with me or you're against me kind of views. And I thought, well, can't I feel mixed, like love this country, but also be heartbroken over some of these things that have happened in this country? And so it was that sort of gray area, but it was this emotional feeling. On January 6th, it was very physical. It was physical, like the flags were literally being used as weapons. And the flag makers are making these flags with such care and such love and such hope. So to see them, the flags being used as literal weapons, it was sort of an embodiment of the way that I had felt when we started the film.
And they, some of the staff there talk about, you know, they feel like there's a little bit of them, their soul that goes into their products, these American flags and flagpoles. Can you talk about this diverse group of people and the commitment they had to this thing they were making?
Yes. Radissa says, you know, every thought that a flag maker is thinking, all the feelings that they're thinking on that day, that literally they it's like their thoughts and their feelings are going into the threads of that flag, that they are literally the threads of our country, which is such a beautiful statement. And later she says, you know, I love this country, but you don't love something because it's perfect. You love something because it's yours, which I loved that statement because it was I think it's quite poetic. I think it's true. We can love this country and still want to make it even better and still want to make it even sort of a more perfect union.
Cynthia, we'll leave it there. Thanks for sharing this with us today.
Thank you so much.
That's Cynthia Wade, Academy Award-winning documentary filmmaker. She talked to us about her latest film she co-directed. It's the National Geographic documentary, The Flag Makers. It debuts today on Disney Plus. And as we heard earlier, the announcement came out today. It is shortlisted for the Academy Awards this year. Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, undocumented farm workers play a huge role in agriculture in Wisconsin and around the country. There's a bill in Congress that aims to clarify their legal status, but it's on hold. We'll find out why, look at what the bill would do, and why it is stalled again after being reintroduced over the years. And we all experience loss at some point in our lives. We'll get some advice on coping with it with the author of the new book, Owning Grief, Widowed Young, How I Discovered Gifts in Loss. That and more. It's coming up tomorrow here on Central Time. Coming up next, it's news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio. Then we'll dive into the world of Hallmark and Lifetime and other holiday movies made for TV and why people either love them or hate them. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, Wisconsin is expected to see multiple inches of snow by the end of the week, plus blowing snow, which could make travel plans more dangerous. We'll talk to a meteorologist and a state safety expert. First, sitting down with a blanket and turning on the Hallmark Channel is a holiday tradition for many people and families. But there are also lots of people who can't stand these made-for-TV movies and look down on them as low quality or derivative. Their popularity seems to be rising, as Hallmark, for example, says it made 40 new Christmas movies this year compared to just 23 in 2020, which still seems like a lot. And Hallmark isn't the only game in town. The Lifetime Network makes its own holiday movies. And on streaming, Netflix lists a handful of holiday movies in its top 10 most popular movies right now. Love them or hate them, they're here for the holidays, and they're a surefire way to pass the time during this week's winter storm. Our own Larry Mueller is a fan, by the way. He sent us a note saying, I like those cheesy movies, but don't quote me on that. Whoops, I quoted him on that. And you could join in, too, at 800-642-1234. Are you a fan of the holiday, the Christmas movies on Hallmark, Lifetime, or elsewhere? What do you like about them? Or if you're not a fan, what do you dislike about them? Do you have a favorite you'd like to share with us? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Elena Levine is a professor of English at UW-Milwaukee. Her research and teaching focuses on media studies and television. Elena, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Can you give us the basics of what people who are in for when they watch these movies? For people who maybe haven't checked them out, are there common themes that we might encounter here?
Oh, there's definitely some common themes in these holiday time movies. They tend to lean towards the romantic comedy genre, and they're often set in very, you know, small, idyllic kinds of towns and communities. And they often have a storyline where a couple has a kind of unexpected cute meeting where they encounter each other. Often one of them is coming from outside this idyllic town or returning to it. And they kind of find a way to both to each other and eventually tend to fall in love, but also usually there's some additional message of goodwill towards the community or an extended family or something like that. There's this kind of feel good message on multiple levels.
Now, these things, these holiday movies have been around for quite a while now, but it seems like they've gotten bigger and bigger in recent years, just in terms of sheer numbers. Do you see this as kind of a rising Christmas themed trend?
For sure. This has become an increasingly big part of the television business in particular. And it's kind of amazing, as you were talking about at the beginning, how much this pattern has grown in recent years. Of course, we have an expansion in all kinds of television, right? There's just way more television content than we've ever had in the past because we have so many platforms and outlets and they need content to fill them. And so this is definitely part of that movement, but it's kind of fascinating that this is a space and a genre that starts to take up so much of that real estate this time of year on all of these different channels and streaming platforms.
Now, the dig on these movies from people who don't like them are they're formulaic, they're predictable. And, you know, these aren't things I watch, but a lot of things I do like, you know, sometimes they are. Sometimes you want something that's formulaic and predictable. Maybe if you're dealing with holiday stress, that's exactly what you want. Do you see anything wrong with this as a genre?
Oh, gosh, no, I don't see anything wrong with it. I mean, I think people should enjoy what they enjoy and that we should probably be less judgmental about those kinds of things as a whole in the big picture, right? Nobody is ready to take on really weighty content every second that they're engaging with their entertainment media. But I think you touched on something really true, which is that people are looking for some kind of feel-good escape fantasy type content this time of year in particular. Maybe they're dealing with stress in their real lives. You know, as much as this can be a happy time for many people, it's also a stressful time for many people. And so this kind of content allows for that sort of downtime feeling and that kind of escape. And it also is, you know, a way of kind of experiencing this time of year. It's a ritual or a tradition like people have with lots of other things around the holidays. And so watching this kind of content can kind of fit that hole as well for people. So there's lots of ways in which it can be a, you know, rewarding experience for the viewers. And I don't think we should look down on it necessarily. If it's not your thing, fine. You know, there's plenty of other content for somebody to consume if they want to watch something. But definitely there's, you know, lots and lots of people who do enjoy it.
Talking to Elena Levine, professor of English at UW-Milwaukee, looking at holiday movies, Christmas movies on, you know, your Hallmarks, your Lifetime, these made-for-TV movies. They're a big business. Lots of people watch them. Are you a fan of these? Do you have holiday rituals built around them on your own or with your family? Do you have a favorite? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Are you watching one right now? It's pretty good multitasking if you're listening to me talk at the same time. 800-642-1234 is the number, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. All right, we've got a taste of some of these movies. Here's one. These don't often have big names. Here's one that does. Lindsay Lohan, Falling for Christmas. This is on Netflix. It's a story about normal stuff. A newly engaged heiress has an accident, loses her memory, falls in love with another man. Here's a listen.
Sheriff, could you please tell her to let me out of here?
First, we need to figure out who you are.
What do you mean, who I am? My name is...
So what are we supposed to do with her?
I have a place.
Does it have room service?
From the trailer for Falling for Christmas with Lindsay Lohan. A lot of movies have used that memory loss plot device. I've talked to you about soap operas. It comes up there, too. We go back to these familiar themes in our holiday movies, apparently.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, I think the comparison to soap operas is not an accident, right? These movies are certainly watched by everyone, but I think they're imagined as having a primarily female audience, which is also the audience that is assumed to be the main audience for soap operas. Again, what the imagined audience is, who that is, and who actually watches aren't always exactly the same. But there's definitely a way in which it's these movies draw on some of the patterns that are familiar to us from lots of forms of media and culture associated with women, whether they're soap operas, romance novels, you know, other kinds of TV movies, you know, all kinds of cultural forms, definitely romantic comedies in terms of feature films that are associated with women and that tend to kind of tell lighthearted fantasy stories that might not, you know, cue that closely to reality, but that people find connection to, at least maybe in terms of the emotions that the characters experience, that they get to experience through those characters. So, you know, the example that you were showing of this newer movie with Lindsay Lohan is a good example of drawing on exactly those kinds of, you know, those traits, those aspects of the storytelling. Now, I mean, no one probably would admit, would claim that those things are wholly original or ideas that nobody's thought of before. And in some ways, that's the point. You know, the point is to see these kind of tried and true formulas kind of played out in a new form. And there's pleasure in seeing that.
And part of the story, I think, is the economics here. These aren't movies, you know, this isn't a Mission Impossible with bankable stars like Tom Cruise. It's not a Marvel star-studded superhero movie. By Hollywood standards, we can make a lot of these movies for fairly cheap, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's a big part of the explanation for why these exist. They're sort of the audience part. People do like them, but there's a kind of media business part of it too here, where these are produced quickly at relatively low budgets, and they just don't cost that much to make compared to other kinds of content that cable channels, broadcast networks, streaming platforms can generate. And so that's why there's so many of them, is that they are in some ways a formula enough that they can be created at relatively low cost. And, you know, they have quick production schedules. A lot of these movies employ actors who have worked a lot in TV. Some actually are like daytime soap opera actors or former daytime soap opera actors, other actors who've been in episodic television. And, you know, those kinds of working conditions are very fast. People need to learn their lines quickly. They need to deliver quickly once the cameras are on. And these are, you know, actors who are used to that kind of thing because they've done that in other jobs. And so all of these factors come together to help make this a relatively inexpensive form of production that is, you know, suiting the interests of the businesses who are creating and distributing these movies for us.
We're talking to UW-Milwaukee English professor Elena Levine about made-for-TV holiday movies on Hallmark plus Lifetime, streaming platforms like Netflix. Want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Are you a fan? Do you see it as a guilty pleasure? Don't. You can enjoy them. No shame about it. We'd love to hear what you watch, what you like about them, who you watch them with, or if you do it solo, let us know about it. 800-642-1234. I know you're out there. 800-642-1234 if you want to share your love of these seasonal made-for-TV Christmas and other holiday movies. 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our conversation with Elena Levine, English professor at UW-Milwaukee, who focuses on television and digital media, with us today to talk about the made-for-TV holiday movies that some of us love a lot, some folks love to hate. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Nobody calling in on this. Maybe you're watching those Hallmark movies right now. Maybe you're shy about sharing your love for them. Love to hear from you. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. That's 800-642-1234. Do you enjoy hunkering down with one of these, say, Hallmark Christmas movies this time of year? 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Now, most of these movies are Christmas movies. Not all. Here's a clip from Hallmark's newest Jewish holiday movie, Hanukkah on Rye, about a matchmaker pairing two competing deli owners.
I've signed you up with a very famous matchmaker in Brooklyn, Rose Mazansky.
Who?
Why?
Because you need her. And she has a 100% success record.
100%?
That's impossible. She doesn't do anything with the internet. No apps, no Instabook.
Now I'm gonna try to correct you there.
She does everything the old-fashioned way. It's wonderful.
Hanukkah on Rye from Hallmark. Mostly, as I mentioned, Elena, these are Christmas-themed. Do you see more branching out or the potential for more branching out?
Yeah, I think one of the fascinating things that's been happening as the quantity of these movies has increased over time is that they've also started to diversify a bit. They tend to be pretty standard. Like we were saying, they tend to be explicitly Christmas themed. They tend to feature heterosexual couples. They tend to feature white couples. But we're starting to see more and more diversity there. Hanukkah on Rye is a good example of that, of having occasional movies that are holiday themed but feature Jewish characters, or a mixed religion pair, and where a holiday like Hanukkah might play a part. There's also the occasional same-sex couple in these stories. There's definitely more racial and ethnic diversity more broadly across these movies over time. And it's kind of been fascinating to see how something that seemed to be a very standard, typical kind of genre type has started to branch off into a variety of different forms. Now, they still tend to have the same kind of hokey feel-good messaging, right? As even that trailer for Hanukkah on Rye makes clear. So there's not that much difference. But the kind of diversity they're sharing is not very substantive, right? We're not getting into like the different, you know, in-depth cultural experiences of different kinds of groups or communities, but it's still kind of offering a little bit more variety in what we're seeing through those kinds of representations.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Mike is with us in Green Bay. Mike, hi.
So, yeah, hello. So you need to understand that I grew up as the most cynical kid from the west side of Chicago, and now we live in Green Bay, okay? So my wife would watch these things, and I would just make fun. So finally, I watched one with her, and now I am hooked. And every single night, we watch Hallmark. And, you know, it's something that we do together, right? And, you know, sometimes we say the lines that we know are coming up, and we figure out what time the conflict is going to be resolved based on where they're at, you know, on the clock. Yeah, and it's kind of a silly, feel-good, mindless, wonderful thing that we do together. But like I said, I made fun of us.
And you lived happily ever after, Mike, it sounds like, watching these movies together.
Oh, I'm telling you, that's what, that's what keeps us together, the couple that, watches together stays together,
I love it. Mike, thank you so much for sharing that story. Elena, if we give them a chance, they can lure us in.
Absolutely. I love that story. It's such a great example of how these things can appeal to anybody. And I also love Mike's description of the kind of predicting that they do as they watch. And that's like a pleasure of watching these that we might not think of, right? Like, oh, they're so, the critics might say they're so formulaic, you know exactly what's going to happen. But that can be part of the fun, right? When you know something is going to fall out a certain way, there's a lot of, pleasure in predicting what's going to happen next and knowing the moment at which something's going to happen, knowing the lines they're going to say. That's great. And so I think it's a really good example of how people can get all kinds of things out of these experiences that we might not realize on first glance.
Thanks so much for sharing that story with us at 800-642-1234. Linda joins us now in Bayfield. Linda, hi.
Hi.
What do you think? Do you watch these?
No.
Why not?
I watched one. If you've seen one, you've seen them all.
So you're not going back, Linda. You weren't lured in.
No, not going to be lured in.
All right. Linda, thanks a lot. So that is a negative for Linda, Elena. We were talking earlier that predictability, and for Mike too, that predictability can be a selling point too.
Sure, right? Some people are turned off by that, and some people find that pleasurable, right? And of course, there's lots of things that we watch, right, that have that predictable pattern, and we watch them to get that experience of being able to know what's going to happen or to experience the emotion that it's going to deliver us the same way every time. But some people, you know, might get that in other places in their lives, and they might want more variety when they sit down to watch something on TV. So you definitely get those different kinds of appeals. But yeah, something about these movies seems to reach a wider audience than we might assume.
Thanks for that call, Linda, at 800-642-1234. We're talking about made-for-TV Christmas and other holiday movies. Elena Levine is with us from UW-Milwaukee. You can still join in at 800-642-1234 if you're a fan or a non-fan, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. You mentioned, Elena, usually these are opposite-sex couples. A Hallmark has a new film out this year called The Holiday Sitter, which sees a workaholic bachelor fall in love with a neighbor he recruits to help him babysit. Here, this is from the trailer.
I like Sam, but I need someone who puts his family first.
Sam is the first guy in a long time to make you look really happy.
I don't know what I'm doing.
You're risking your heart.
Is it always this terrifying?
Yep. I hate to tell you, but it is. Now, go get your guy.
We had an agreement, but things changed. Yeah,
I don't care about the agreement. You're what's important to me, and that's what I was coming to tell you.
Do you think we're going to see more same-sex couples in our Hallmark movies in the future, Elena?
I do. I think that we're seeing, you know, in the mainstream, more if not support, acceptance of same-sex couples throughout our society, and the Hallmark movies or the Christmas, these kind of TV Christmas movies, are a good sort of testing point of that. Also, as there's just more and more of these, as I was saying, they're starting to kind of diversify and nicheify more. There starts to be like this niche of the holiday movies and that niche, and so there's kind of a brand for everyone out there. And I think certainly audiences beyond LGBT audiences may be watching same-sex Christmas and holiday movies, but they're, you know, there's definitely all types. And, you know, increasingly, you know, this year we have a new channel called the Great American Family Channel, which is a more kind of explicitly Christian oriented channel that's making these kinds of movies as a kind of move away from the kinds of diversity you're seeing when you start to see Christmas and holiday movies with same-sex couples. So there's some people who are wanting a more traditional world that doesn't, you know, kind of make room for those kinds of social developments and acceptances. And then there's some people who are happy to see those shifts in the movies that they might watch. And so there's kind of a space for all of this because there's so many of these movies now.
Time for one more caller. Neil is with us in Eau Claire. Neil, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to tell us about, Neil?
Well, my wife is a big fan of these movies, and I told her that I would watch them with her if she allowed me to play the Hallmark movie drinking game.
Which is?
Every time there is some kind of cliche that occurs in a movie, and all the movies have the same cliches, you get to take a drink. For example, if there's a character named Ivy, if there's a snowball fight, if they drink hot chocolate, decorate a Christmas tree, go ice skating. And
Neil, my friend, yeah. Very, very small drinks, okay? Let's be safe out there. Thanks a lot, Neil. I'm glad, hey, you found a way to bring it together and watch these with your wife. I appreciate that. Elena, I got to ask, on a personal level, are you, you know, we got a snowy long weekend coming up here. Are you going to hunker down and watch some of these?
I think so. I mean, I think with the snow coming in and starting to wind down work for the holiday, it seems like the perfect time. So I will definitely be checking some out.
Elena, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
That's Elena Levine, professor of English at UW-Milwaukee. Her research and teaching focuses on media studies and television. She is with us today to talk about the cultural touchstone, tradition for many now, of Hallmark and other made-for-TV holiday movies. Still time for you to share your favorites. If you watch these, if you love to hate watch these, let us know. Head over to the Ideas Network Facebook page and tell us about it, or you can email ideas@wpr.org. Coming up after the news, do you have questions about the upcoming snowstorm this week? A meteorologist and a safety expert will join us to talk about how we can stay safe and prepare for this week's snowy weather and difficult travel conditions. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network.